Blog Talk Radio. Hello, Radiant Beings. Welcome to Awakenings, part of the Converging Flow. I hope all is doing well today. I'm feeling pretty darn playful myself, which is in the theme of today's show as well as February. I just want to remind everyone and those that are just tuning in, saying, what is this Awakenings all about? Awakenings, here we host dialogues with all kinds of people that are living awake, whether they're, you know, dialogues or interviews with spiritual teachers or healers or consciousness experts, visionaries, awakened leaders, authors, conscious beings and peoples of all walks of life. I think the operative word is that they're living awake or awakening in a succession of awakenings, and they're aware that they're in the succession of awakenings and integrating this into their life. Awakenings is a place for guidance to support and guide you through these shifts, changes of these universal awakenings, this evolutionary process that we're in, this expansion, this shift, as well as the soul alignment. And Awakenings is a part of the place of the converging flow, which people will be hearing more and more about from the harmonic convergence. We've flowed into the converging flow where we're all meeting. We're all connecting in to share our life, our love, our wisdom, and inspire each other. Part of the converging flow also is the idea of that law of one, that we are all one. We're all from that individuated, we are individuated, all from the same source, that creative, collective unconsciousness or that spirit. Like we had wonderful Walter Starkey on yesterday. It was fun. He was great. And I finally figured out what he was saying, aches and pains. So I see Senla in the chat, was writing in the chat, what is he, acre of pain? No, 89 years old and no aches or pains. Very, you know, to me, this Walter really typifies the spirit of play. Which really, this is what February is about. And I hope people ask questions in the chat, call in. If you're calling in, it's 347-539-5122 is the number for you can call and listen in. If you're in the chat and you're going to call and just listen in, just shoot me a little message in the chat and I won't pick up, I won't, you know, open the switchboard to your number. Yes, we're going to have a great show, and great February and on. Actually, all up into April, we have some amazing guests, some amazing spiritual beings, teachers. And I have to thank all of you that are in this vibratory frequency of the sacred space of empowerment, which is the chat room, which resonates out because it's not just local. Of course, all of us are converging from different places and sometimes even different points of view. But I got to tell you, we're really holding such a wonderful, playful, spirit-filled, resonant frequency of expanded consciousness that the guests all want to come back. So it's great. They really do have a wonderful time here sharing, and they always comment that they can feel the change, you know, that the energy. They can feel the people. They can feel what's going on, and so that's a wonderful confirmation. Part of the focus right now, as we know what's going on in the economy, this organizing, reprioritizing of household energy, which one form of energy is money. Only one form of energy is money. So there's multitudes of forms. Each and every one of us is an individuated aspect of light and energy. We're form, right? So money represents an energetic component, but it's arbitrary. You know, how much something's worth is very arbitrary. It's set, you know, by certain standards, sometimes individual standards and sometimes group or governmental or collective standards, but it changes over time. So because we're in this major flux, this we're really at a tipping point. And remember, we had Dr. Jude Kuravan on a few weeks previously, which she'll also be back, I believe, in April. She was speaking to the point that we did reach this tipping point. And part of that, reaching the tipping point, means that we are in this quickening phase where there's a lot that's dissolving or dismantling and a lot that's being rebuilt up. So the idea is to really adapt a pioneering spirit, even though it's kind of scary, can be challenging, there's risk involved. But anytime we're engaging in something new or building something up, you know, think of a developer, a real estate developer, someone developing a town, or you move to a new town, you, and Sylvia could speak to this, moving someplace new, there's that risk. You think it's going to be good, you hope it's good, you have a plan, but you have to be flexible. So there's always a risk in this growth. The other day I did, actually Tuesday night, I was invited to speak at a charitable function, Sirens, that does a lot of, they pick various charities to focus on and then do an event around it. A great group of people. And I was asked to speak on what's coming up in 2009 and how is the economy or economic crisis affecting us individually as well as collectively. And I loved it because I was able, even though it was more of a business kind of function, I was able to weave in some astrology and numerology and what I have received since 95 as a on this particular topic as a conscious channel. And so the whole thing was, yes, it is going to affect us individually, but we can ride this wave and look for the openings, look for the opportunity that is in this crisis, which comes from Latin choice point. So we are at a choice point. And for some people it is, everything's dismantling anyway, I might as well try it. I might as well try what I really want to do. I might as well just put it all out there. And others are looking at it and strategizing and seeing, what's that next big thing? What's that, whatever that is in your field or your sector, you know, where is the market going? Where are the trends going? Some of the clients that I work with happen to be in backgrounds that follow trends or make business decisions by trends, such as, you know, venture capitalists or angel investors or stockbrokers and even real estate developers. They're all happy. They're very happy with this. Now, it doesn't mean we're not feeling a pain and a pinch, but there is that saying, mother, you know, what is it? Necessity is the mother of invention. So when we need something, we tend to invent. So I really want to focus this February on assisting in that. You know, tomorrow we have Bob Doyle of The Secret will be on with his wealth consciousness. And I loved, by the way, I loved what Walter Starkey said yesterday about consciousness, that if we would spend more time focusing on the consciousness that creates or the consciousness that creates the result, that we would all, you know, be better off. That's where we need. So it's not so much that, you know, focus on the consciousness that creates the things. Right now, a lot of people are focusing on the things, that the things are disappearing, you know, that there's, you know, there was a lot of things in one area, now there's less things, or there was a lot of money in one area, which is a thing, and now there's less things. Things come from consciousness. So what we all need to be doing is connecting into our consciousness, like we're doing right now, feeding our consciousness, putting in our, you know, filling up the consciousness and drawing in more of that expanded consciousness where those high create ideas come from. You know what I'm talking about, those ahas, those flashes of insight, whether it's a new invention or just a new way of being in the world or new way of being in relationship. When you tap in to that expanded awareness or expanded consciousness, you began to have creative ideas and solutions to problems that your little mind or ego mind would have never thought about. Artists do this all the time. And there's a reason, creative financing, you know, moving this around and doing this and doing that that way. You know, it's all consciousness anyway. We are consciousness in manifested form. So if we now begin to focus more on the consciousness, you know, through tuning in, through prayer, through meditation, through connecting here, through whatever raises the vibrational frequency and reinforces that expanded or raised vibrational frequency, then we're going to know what to do. We're going to know which direction to go in. We're going to know what part of our path do we need to focus on now. What we're going to know what job to take. We're going to know what we need to do in that moment that is most life-enhancing. So part of it is, this is different for many people, and this is different for race conscious or mass consciousness because they've been focused on the form. You know, I just had a wonderful conversation. I hope she tunes in later with a very good friend and colleague of mine that we've been trying to do some projects together. And she has a very varied background and with a bit of an academic or more traditional or conventional background, and is trying to do something more creative. And she was saying that, you know, certain things she gets paid more money. You know, certain things she gets paid $100 an hour. Where did I go with that? I'm really back in the 1800s here. $100 an hour, and some things 30, and then some things were 10. And she says, when I look at what my bills and what I have to do, I say, I can't do the $10 an hour thing. I can't do 30. You know, I only want the $100 an hour. And I said, but it doesn't matter. It's all energy. Take it all. If you want to live abundantly, you live from the overflow. It doesn't matter, $10 an hour, $30 an hour, $100 an hour. Those are all arbitrary numbers. It's all just energy coming towards you from a certain direction. And when you're in a pinch, you take it all. When the overflow happens, when whichever one ends up being more busy, that is, you know, whatever flow, that's going to be your maintaining or stabilizing point. So if that job, you know, right now the $10 an hour job is coming in more, or the $30 an hour job is coming in more, that's where you go. That's the opening. And this is what we have to get beyond the ego personality. We have to, we're not our roles, and we're not the amount of money we make. We're not the form. We're not the roles or the titles that we do. So, you know, this is this way for me. I work sliding. I don't care, really. I mean, if I've got the time or somebody's, you know, really diligent and focused, I'll always work something out. And I've been doing that before there was this recession or whatever we're going to call this, whatever this experience, this reorientating of the energy. Kathy, I love it. Kathy saying, where is that $30 an hour job? Yeah, I know. See, so it's good, right? And the 10, take it all. I love it. Now, Tammy in the chat is saying, it's the energy intention that goes with the physical money. Well, it's the intention, it's the appreciation. You know, sometimes I've gotten, you know, energetically more back from someone that I've been working with or doing service with, that was a trade or a barter, or that were paying, you know, not my full rate on something. Because Journey Home saying, how about that for 75 an hour job? Yeah, I think. See, we what happens when we focus too much on the money? And I love money again. Money, clothes, all the material is great, you know. But when we focus too much on that, we're cutting out the creative flow. We're no longer doing something from the joy of creativity. When it becomes always about the bottom dollar, and you see what happened here. That's part of the big crises, what's going on. Ethics, integrity, everything goes out the window. So you start, you know, you have a balance of what you're willing to do or what you're willing to take on the financial end. If you begin to see, yes, Tammy, we said this, yes, money is only one form of energy. Yeah, that's, Tammy's putting this in the chat. And that, if everyone could just really get that, that it's all energy, it's all an extension of consciousness. And you, at some point, yes, you can choose, a rate or an amount, but if you're not getting that, we must be careful not to say that I'm not good enough or I'm not worthy enough or something's wrong with me, because you can see it now. You know, I love it right now because I actually do have some clients, you know, and I feel for them, but I do have some clients that have lost quite a bit of money in the old stock market and pension, and we're talking not some of them hundreds of thousands, some of them millions. And but guess what? It's all relative, because what that game is gone now. That said, that if you have a certain amount of money in the bank, that somehow you are better, or you did the right things, you know. And I'm not saying that that's not a great game to play. All I'm saying is that there's been an over-focus that if you played that game, then somehow you were better off, and you did things right. Now the rug has been pulled out, and it's like, well, it's not fair because I did all the right things and now this is gone. So what I am saying is that people have to get beyond the roles and identifying with the external forms. That's part of what this is happening. I'm more happy talking about came from a money family with money. Yeah. Well, I did too, in the modeling and the acting. You made tons of money. So, but you cannot identify. I was very blessed and very lucky that I had my spiritual, I was very spiritually integrated, and that part of my life was very fulfilling and enriching. So when I didn't get jobs or people didn't think I looked right for a role, you know, or a job, or I made less money on something, I didn't look at it as something was wrong with me or that I was less than. I didn't care. I saw the game. I saw for what it was, you know. Sometimes a redhead is in, and oh, they don't want exotic, you're too exotic, or now they want more exotic, or, you know, a blonde means this, or a tall one means that, or, you know, all these labels, and I just saw it as this man-made game. But part of the issue is what's happening is that most people don't see it as a man-made game, and they buy into it, and then as Tammy is saying in the chat, that their self-esteem and their sense of self and their sense of worth is tied into what things they have. You know, it could even be knowledge. Instead of having self-knowledge, a lot of people are hooked on the book knowledge. So I feel that this is all happening as a redirection of energy so that people go back within. You know, I've been terming, as some of the speaking engagements I've been doing, I've been terming it as we're moving from consumerism into creativism. Where we were in, oh, that's great, More Happy, about bartering. I love that. That's great. Yeah, new game in town, and it's real. All right, Senna, that's true. It is a new game in town. I have termed it as we're moving from consumerism into creativism. If we would have stayed in the over-focus of consumerism, you could most assuredly see how we would be burning out as a species. And especially, you know, definitely globally this is going on, but specifically really here in the Americas. So those of you, you know, my wonderful friends that are in Europe that are listening today, because I've lived in Europe. Yes, it's not as consumery as us over here. We're like, you know, they're not as tied into that game. Maybe because they did it hundreds of years ago. I'm not sure. So what happens in this time of crises or this choice point is that we're having to tap into our creativity and to tap into inspiration, to be inspired. That inspirar is that breath of life, that breath from God, or the all that is, however you want to term that, but literally from Latin, inspirar, that is that breathing in the breath of God or that breath of life. So there is a call and there's a push for some a little nudge and some a major push that now you have to, you know, breathe in that breath of life and, you know, look around and then breathe it out. What does that mean? That some of us as creative beings have to be released into the world. Every time, and let me just explain that, every time we make something or do something, it's an aspect of us that goes out into the world. It's a creation from us. When you write a book, that's an extension of you in the world. When you do service, when you reach out to someone, that's an extension of you in the world. I got an amazing, beautiful, and one of my favorite colors too, and then a graphic image from Senla, who was posted on my MySpace, and for Awakenings. It's great. So if you go to my MySpace, you'll see it, or Senla's, but I don't know Senla. If you put it in the chat, Senla, then people can know. And that is an extension of Senla. That is an extension of that energy, the Senla energy, that is put there in that graphic. And so every time we do something that is creative, we're extending an aspect of ourselves. And that's what we're meant to be doing. If we don't extend aspects of ourselves, the individuated aspects of ourselves, there's less and less creation in the world. If we're consuming and consuming and consuming, things are not growing. They're not extending. You know, so it's time for people to extend more. It's time for people to create more varied forms of creative expression. And as Senla had put in the chat, a new game in town. There is a new economy that is forming that is not based only on the financial or the material. You know, and you've been seeing this happening. That, you know, it's what's said on the internet, content is king. You know, or content is queen. So it's all, you know, the content comes from an individual. Content is a creative expression. It's a form of self-expression or creative expression. So there are these new forms, and from these new forms come new jobs, new opportunities. You know, and I suggest to all of you to start, you know, whether it's, you know, bartering or dollar, you know, for your service, whatever, however, but just to start getting your new forms, your creative ideas more and more out there. This February, the focus being this inspired living, spirit-led living, allowing yourself to live spiritually, enriched. And we do that by tapping more into our creativity, by tapping more into our self-expression. I mean, we are meant here to be creative beings. I think we have learning lessons as we go, but I've been through so many different belief systems, you know, religions and philosophies that I have studied over the years because of my background in the field that I'm in. Really, my awareness, and I think the big aha is we are really just here to create. We're here to self-express. If you want to say express God through you as you, or express the all that is through you as you, or just express you as you, just be you. So, you know, the learnings come with it because we learn as beings, we grow, we expand, but really this life is about expression, creative expression. And so many of us have had that dented, you know, our third chakra, our emotional center, our inner child has been dented, and so it's hard to create, it's hard to feel safe to put your creations out there if your inner child is not feeling safe or taken care of, you know, and there are ways to tap into that. So real focus in the next few months for us here on Awakenings is having people come on the program and share with you and really get a dialogue. So I really invite all of you to, you know, call in and put questions in the chat or comments or let us know what's worked for you to free up. So because of this turning point, this crisis point, this change point, this tipping point, that all of you and those that continue to come into this flow get the support and the insight to extend out more creatively, you know, to you know, and even heal through your creations. but to live more fulfilled, more creatively, and also to get your creative expressions out more. Two books I love by the author that we're going to be speaking with, Sark. I have a wonderful time with her, I know. I keep close to my bed. One is Inspiration Sandwich, and the other one is Prosperity Pie, How to Relax About Money and Everything Else. And I think it's, to me, it wasn't just a book about money. It was just a book about just how can you just be you. And Sark writes in such a playful way that it's very accessible. Fun to read, but also draws you in a way that you can really move through your challenges and be more creative, more expressive. Because we are creative beings. I think that's a really important thing that we all have to remember. Here's one page that I opened up to that I think is perfect. Money, your money is not your life. It just feels that way sometimes. This is from Prosperity Pie. So the thing is, I think it's time. It's time for everyone to just dive in, to jump in, and get the support in the diving in, the jumping in, that says you can be more creative. I like Sandra in the chat is saying you can ride the wave. Yes, there is a wave, and because all that are the listeners and those that are awakening or in the succession of awakenings around the world are hearing this call saying, there is a different way. We are creating the new way, and we are in the change. We are in the shift. We're in it. We are it. So part of that is tapping more into your creativity and living more from that self-expressive place, if you will. So I want to say, I'm hoping maybe we do have our guest on the air. Some of you may know of her already. I have a few people I know listening to emailing that have read Sark's books. And Sark is an inspirer and an accelerator, and I love that because she inspires but also accelerates people to go to the perhaps that next step or next level. I know she definitely does it through her books, and we're going to find out other ways that she does this. The acronym SART comes from Susan Ariel Rainbow Kennedy. Isn't that beautiful? And SART has been a transformative teacher and leader for over 25 years, and she's written and created 15 best-selling books and hundreds of products. And she's the founder and CEO of Planet SART. And you've got to really check out her website. It's an amazing, amazing website. A lot of playful things to draw you in. And a lot of inspiration, but a lot of resources. That's one thing I really like about Sark, is that she always puts resources in her books and also, you know, obviously on the website also. There's some planetsark.com. And we're going to talk to her also a little bit. I'm kind of curious about this moving past fear, procrastination, and perfectionism with her micro movements to inspiration and success. So I want to see if she is on the line, and if so, we're going to dive into the play field, the creative play field. Hello?
I'm here, Michelle.
Hi, Sark. I was hoping that was you.
I love it. We're in the play field.
Yes. I'm so glad you could do this. I think your work is timely right now. You know, I mean, it's always been timely, but I think right now that the change point that we're in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Someone was just pointing out, you know, I have a poster that I wrote called How to Really Love a Child.
Mm.
And I'll read a little bit of it. It's be there, say yes as often as possible. If they get crabby, put them in water. If they're unlovable, love yourself.
Mm.
And it goes on. It's got about 40 other phrases. And I just got a bunch of emails pointing out that all of these things were all things to do that don't cost money.
Wow.
And it was such a good reminder that, you know, and I heard you talking about the subject of being creatively expressive, and, you know, our creative expressions don't cost money.
Yeah.
And, or if they do, it's very nominal. Mm. But that really to be actively creative on a daily basis is what we're all being called to do now. Yeah. And I'm so excited about it because, yes,
I know.
You know, yes, it's a crisis point. Yes, it's a change point, but it has everyone's attention.
Yeah.
And so that's why I love the name of your show, too, because it really is about awakening.
Yeah, it really. You know, I saw something, and I want to share with you that, because and get your take on this. Years ago, I hosted a television program called Fashion and Beauty, and it's in the early 90s, this particular show, and I was interviewing somebody in a department store, you know, like the buyer, you know, they had like fashions and, you know, what's in style and this and that. Sark, I saw rows and rows and rows of the same articles of clothing.
Yes.
And I remember, I asked the woman, I said, oh, where are we doing the interview? And she said, oh, here, this is the junior department. That's right. We're doing it here in the junior department. I said, I was shocked. I said, oh, this isn't the storeroom. And she said, no, why? And I said, oh, because you have like 40 of the same outfit. I mean, I'm telling you, all the racks have the same thing. And she said, oh, I know. The kids, though, when they come in, they won't wear it unless they see a lot of the same thing. And I said, oh, my God, that's so different than my generation wanting to be individual. And then she said, oh, no, they'll even come in and say, you know, and this is, I mean, it started then, but it's even worse now. The kids will come in and say, is everybody wearing this?
Uh-huh.
Or does everybody buy this? You know, what the phone, even with the phones now, it has to be what everybody else is wearing or has. And I thought, what happened to the creativity?
Yes. Well, and we know that it's there. It's been mm-hmm. Sublimated by that, you know, false construct.
Yeah, somebody, Angels was putting the chat room clones. Yeah, so how did we get from kind of individual beings into clones, you know, where we're just consuming instead of creating?
Well, and that's the shift, because now we're all getting the message, everyone's getting the message loud and clear and in very creative ways that consuming has to turn to creating.
Mm-hmm.
And, you
well,
know,
I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and in a culture like Bali, let's remember that everyone is thought of as a creative being in Bali. Your expression might be through wood, it might be through cloth, it might be with children.
Mm-hmm.
But your creative expression is sacred there and mm-hmm. endowed. And here it has been thought of as the creative people and then the other people.
Yes.
And it's
Boy,
a very strange divide, and it's not true at all, and it's caused a lot of people to believe that they're not creative. And then act that way.
Mm.
I mean, if you've been told you're not creative, you're going to do clone-like behavior.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Or you're steered away from what the quote-unquote creative fields, which earlier I was speaking about, this one colleague or friend of mine was so steered into nothing wrong with dentists, that's a different form of creativity, but it certainly wasn't her passion. And now she's, you know, getting out of that and going in a different, you know, way different direction. She's teaching dancing, you know, salsa dancing at that, and as an interviewer. that's a big difference for us, you know.
Yes,
and
the truth is there's room for everyone to have their passion because there are passionate dentists and there are passionate accountants and there are passionate government people. So there really is room if everyone would really align with who they are and what they want to be doing. There's room for everybody.
Yeah, but I think too, Sark, what you were saying that I think was so profound on that note is that there's the creative and then the other, and it's almost like if you get pushed in that, then there's a sense that what you're doing, even if it is an accountant or dentist or something like that, that it can't be creative or isn't creative, then you must be the non-creative type.
Right, and so it really is a whole paradigm shift because, mm-hmm. you know, some of the most creative people we have on the planet are anyone who's a parent or doing childcare.
Mm.
And if you're not creative while you're doing that, you're going to be so miserable because children live in an orb of constantly shifting creativity. And, you know, if you're trying to, you know, make it in any kind of linear, plan, it's just going to be, first of all, very amusing because the child never follows the linear plan, and there's going to be power struggles, et cetera. So many parents and caregivers of children have learned to have their creative expression be alongside children and with children, but yet it's not acknowledged in our society as a creative endeavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
So it's a shift of the mind. I mean, if people start describing themselves, the biggest thing I find, I mean, teaching 20 plus years is, you know, probably 70% of the people that come to Sark Workshop, and remember, they've read Sark books, and they are doing, quote, creative things. Maybe 70% of these people will still say, I'm not creative.
Ooh, that's a high number.
Yeah, because they have a belief system that's been supported by society that to be creative, you need to be wacky, and you need to be have paint on your clothes, and you need to be...
Yeah.
Kind of an outsider, and you're just really a risk taker. And so, for instance, I'm a highly organized person. And for years, I hid this because I thought I wouldn't be accepted as a creative if I was also organized.
Mm.
So I literally almost came out of the closet as an organized person.
But it's true because you do have that kind of people think, oh, if you're the artist, you're disheveled and everything is all over the place. So you're in process too, coming out, and it's saying, okay, I'm an artist, but I'm also, I can be creative.
And I'm also a business person, and I'm a very creative business person.
What would you say creativity is?
Well, I think creativity is responding to the moment, and expressing what's not in shape yet. So expressing not what's not in shape or form in some new way. So that's what's so exciting about creativity, because every single person, you know, we could give the same subject to every person and say, write about this or do something with this. You know, let's take a subject, money. You know, tell us something creative about money, or show us a way that you handle money creatively, or talk to us about how you know, and every, there would, you know, if we asked 100 people, there would be 100 creative ways. And isn't that exciting? And some of them would duplicate, some of them would overlap, you know, but many of them would be brand new things that we've never seen or thought of before.
So in a way, Lola's asking in the chat, creativity, it's about ideas also then.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. I think that's a really good point, because people get caught up in thinking that creativity has to have a physical form.
Mm.
You know, that if people think of creativity as pens and paper and crayons and glitter, and, you know, that's creativity. You know, and listen, we have the most creative presidential person we've ever had. The new administration and president is extremely creative. Did everybody catch this yesterday when they were at a school because they said they got tired of being inside the White House and they wanted to go meet some kids? So they went and read stories and shook every hand of every child in that school, in that class.
Oh, wow. Wow. You know, I didn't see I didn't get that's why they had done that. I saw a little blip of that, but I didn't know why they were there.
And that's what they said. I mean, that's so creative, you know, instead of, you know, it's time to help raise literacy and got tired. We were cooped up in the White House. We wanted to get out.
Yeah. Well, I think even the plan is so creative, a lot of people aren't getting it also.
Well, exactly. And
this
is the challenge now, because, you know, we're calling everyone's creative spirit into action.
Ooh, I love that. Yeah. We are. It is a call for action. And as you said, just answering whatever's going on in that moment is that creative. We're being asked to have a creative, you know, response to whatever's going on in our life. You know, maybe for some it's reinventing themselves, whatever it is, there is a genuine call, I think, also to be more authentic.
Yes. Yeah, I have something that I take with me everywhere I go when I speak and teach, and it says, the only thing more important than being good is being real.
Whoa. That's
And I meditate on that before I speak to a group of people because I want to make sure that I'm as real as I can be. And before I do a show like this, I mean, can I be as real as I can be?
Yeah, then I think if you're doing that, you're coming from that space that you're not even really caring about the outcome. You're just coming up as you, you know, just let me connect, let me just be. Then you're in that process. I think sometimes things get overstructured in this life.
Yes.
And that cuts off that genuine flow that's always flowing through us.
Yes, exactly.
Doesn't it?
Yes. And we all know the difference. I mean, we all know the difference when we watch someone that's on a television show and we know they're just waiting to promote their movie.
Yeah.
And we can feel it. And we just think, okay, you know, yeah, I knew it's a movie coming out. That's why he's on there. That, you know, versus the person that is genuinely on there in that moment. And, oh, yeah, I am doing a movie. You know, and it doesn't mean they're making less of the movie. It means a creative approach to sharing who they are at the same time they're sharing that they happen to make a film.
Yeah, exactly. And I think people know that, too. They're wanting that creative expression in the moment. They're wanting to connect with that person. And in the natural connecting, you have people, you know, going to the movie, getting the book, getting the CD, or joining whatever it is, or coming on board anyway, because there's a genuine connection.
Well, yeah, and that feels good, and that also feels creative. So then you're sharing creative resources. And thanks for saying that. You know, I'm a big believer in resources, and I'm a big believer in sharing them. And, you know, I'm bringing something back to my e-letter that I used to do, and I'm giving it a new name. It's just called Good Things from Sark. Because, you know, I was a kid who came home in the first grade and said to my mom, I think show and tell should be me every day.
Did you, Sark?
And my mom said, you know, honey, you know, the other kids need a chance. And I said, no, they don't. They don't want to do it. They're begging me to do it. I said, and I'm seeing things every day to share. And so luckily I had this really great first grade teacher who set up a program where I did a different grade every day. So she made it possible for me to do show and tell every day. And, you know, I feel like this section in my e-letter that I've done for years, which I'm bringing back now, which is sharing more good things. I have friends who call me their portable good news station because I'm just bulging with all these good things. And by the way, let's be sure to mention goodnewsnetwork.org.
Okay.
I really recommend it to everyone. And I'm a member, and I'm just really such a support of what they're doing. They've been around for 15 years, and they only do good news. And there's so much good news. And you'll just be astonished. I mean, you go on there and read it, and you just get high.
Wow, okay. So just for those listening, I'm going to give a couple, because I've been putting it in the chat, but some people that are auditory only and not in the chat, it's goodnewsnetwork.org, and then Sark's website also is planetsark, that's SARK.com, planetsark.com. So that you can listen. I know a lot of people sometimes like to be listening and then also have the visual on their
I love that you're doing that. It's so cool. It's so creative.
Yeah.
Michelle, you're so creative.
I love, you know,
you know,
yeah,
I laugh about this sometimes. People will say to me, they'll come up and they'll, you know, they'll be so excited to meet me, and they'll kind of poke me and they'll say something creative. You know?
I was so excited when your assistant said, "Oh yes, you can, you know, come on." I was like, "Oh my God, this is great!" I've been calling everybody. You're not going to believe, because my workshops, I've used your book a lot with you know, personal clients that I have, as well as workshops that you really need to read this. You know, you really need to view yourself differently, and it's, you know, for those of you that are listening that perhaps haven't, I would go to Amazon right now and take a peek and inside the book, because the way that you're dealing with some deeper concepts, but the way that it's written, people, I mean, adults, you know, little that are working on their inner child especially, but not just them, but everybody, you know, but can access the book and get this, you know, deeper insight or wisdom, or even little processes that you're doing in the book, where they're transforming, but it's happening in a way that it doesn't seem like it's not work. You know, it's
right.
like fun. That was kind of fun.
Right. I deliberately used colors to sneak the lessons past.
Yes. Yes. Like you have something, you know, I'm opening up and it says, eat inspiring foods. Let miracles find you. Open a book to any page. Let what your eyes see change you. It's just, I don't know, it's just fun. Sometimes, believe it or not, I'll just even hold the book or open it, and I just feel good looking at the way that you've written it because it's done in your own writing. Can you tell, also, I'm curious, you started writing the books and you decided not to type it out, right? You do it by hand?
Yeah, back in 1989 when I finally got brave enough, I finally answered the question that everybody creatively expressing answers at one point or another, which is, how dare you? How dare you share your words and stories? I mean, it's the biggest, it's huge, because basically if you have any inner critics at all, which most of us do, they will come leaping out to tell you why you can't or why you won't or why you didn't or why you never will. And so I finally, you know, I had been talking about books for so long. I had been such an avid procrastinator. And I just was always talking about these books, but I was never actually physically making them real. And then this editor came to my garden to have tea, and she was one of many thousands who had asked me about when I was going to write or what I was going to write. And she just innocently said, well, have you ever thought of writing books? Because she came to talk to me about my poster, How to Be an Artist, that I had written. And I practically pushed her down to get her out of the garden so I could go back in my little cottage and write my first book. And it all came pouring out in 2 weeks' time. And I always tell people, remember to delight yourself first, and then others can be truly delighted. Because if you are trying, this goes back to being authentic again, or real. If you're trying to do something, that's what shows. Like if you're thinking of an audience and trying to do something, that's what shows. If you do it from your heart and spirit and what delights and informs you, that's what shows. So I wrote the book that delighted my heart and made me glow. And then lo and behold, it was very crooked and strange looking and handwritten and crooked. And I thought, oh, no, you know, now nobody will do, you know, I won't be able to share it with the world. And then I had to beat those critics down. And, you know, that same editor met with me for tea again. And while I was in the bathroom, she snuck this book out of my, because I made it into a book so it looked the way it does today. And she took it out of my bag and said, when I came back from the bathroom, she said, you know, we have to publish this exactly like it is.
Wow.
And I said, oh, thank heavens, because I wouldn't do it any other way. Mm. And that was the start. That was, you know, and 15 books later, I'm still doing books that way.
Yeah. And you're known for that then also,
yes.
Which I love. It's true to you, and you know this experience, this energy you're getting. I think that's one of the things, too, with your books. It's really, it's an experience. It's an energy. It's not just this written word coming, but you really are getting a bit of you in this.
Oh, there's all, you know, it's all my heart is in there. I mean, every book is all my heart. They're written with all my heart. They're not written as a process or to achieve something. They're written with all my heart. What were you going to say?
Well, and then in the writing, so they kept it this way, and then you realize this is how you get joy writing this way. And so
what's really wonderful is I kept it this way. So they basically just photographed it. They didn't have, you know, I did some slight copy editing. I have worked with editors who have definitely made the books better and more clear. However, I only change about 30% of what they suggest, because as soon as I feel anything is changing the heart of the book, I won't do it.
Yeah, yeah. That's one thing I think is so important for people to get also, is the tone of your book comes across. So any writer, I mean, you could definitely, Sark, with your books, you get the energy, you get the tone. But you've also made a conscious choice, you know, to keep that tone, which... Unfortunately, a lot of writers get swayed, and it doesn't sound like them anymore, you know?
Right.
Just
right.
Kind of,
and and it's so exciting now that we have so many more digital opportunities to publish our own work. So if you're getting swayed or you don't like how your tone is being changed, don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I adamantly would not change what I had created. I would have lived in a box before I changed it.
Mm-hmm. But see, that's that authentic, you know, commitment to your truth. And like you said earlier, it has to be something that delights you. You know, and a lot of people, I don't know what your feeling is on this side, but I think when you come from that, you naturally draw in, you know, abundance in all, you know, all its forms. I'm not just going to say financial or in the monetary, but you live more abundantly because you're claiming your worth right then and there, you know. You know.
Yes, it is true.
Now, we did have a question back in the chat. I'm going to digress just a teeny bit, but Tammy was asking, do you have any of the books in San Diego schools? Or
A lot of the books are used in schools. I know that each publisher has a way for teachers to get discounts, and, you know, I don't do that personally, but I know the publishers do.
Okay, so if someone wanted to, they would just contact the publisher then.
Yes, and in my frequently asked questions on my website are all the books listed with their publishers and a publisher contact information.
Okay, so I'm putting
that
in.
Isn't that organized of me?
Yes, that is. I mean, you got, when you go to your site, you have everything. You even have, you know, people that want to publish, what's your suggestion, you know, really, really good information.
Thank you.
And it's fun. It's fun to go on the colors. It is. It's your own Planet Sark. It's your own world. And you can order on there. But let's talk a little bit, Sark, a day in the life of, right? Because you mentioned the Sark workshops. If you have any of those coming up, for one thing, and then also what your focus is usually with those workshops.
Yeah, I do about 10 to 12 events through the year at places that I really believe in and love. So I teach all over the country. I'm at Omega in New York. I go to Kripalu in Western Massachusetts. I teach at private studios. I'm going to be at a great one in Southern California. It's an artist named Carol Parks, and I highly recommend her website. Oh, my goodness, her energy is so amazing. And then there's a place in Sonoma, California called Starway, Starwae, but you don't have to remember this. You can go to Planet Sark and go to Ecstatic Events, and it's all listed there. But in the short term, I am going to be in Mountain View, California, which is in the San Francisco Bay Area, doing a Juicy Pens Thirsty Paper. That's my newest book. Juicy Pens Thirsty Paper, Gifting the World with Your Words and Stories and Creating the Time and Energy to Actually Do It.
Because you hit on something there. The time and energy, yeah. How do you, because you look at your website, I know you have helpers, magic helpers that you work with, but you've got a lot of time and energy.
Well, I think it's important to realize that time and energy is also creative. And so I write about the time stretcher and the time shrinker. For instance, I just called in the time stretcher because I'm launching my new service next week. We'll talk about that in a minute, but a lot of energy and time is going into that, and it's, you know, I'm also in the process of writing a new book. I'm actually writing 5 books simultaneously. So, yeah, that's why I invented a method to handle time and energy in a new way, and my method, you spoke of it earlier, is called micro-movements. And I've written about
that intrigued me. I really want to know about that. Yeah,
I've written about it in most of my books, and I've been practicing it now for 15 years, so I have through all 15 books, and it's the only reason my books exist, actually, because I was such a big procrastinator and perfectionist, and, you know, most people are both.
I've got a bit of that.
Yeah, and it's a really neat trick, because it basically means that nothing gets done, because, you know, it's never good enough for the perfectionist, and for the procrastinator, it's always later. But let's go back to micro-movements in a minute, because I'd like to spend some time on that. But I want to finish telling people where I'll be. I'll be at East West Bookstore in Mountain View Friday, February 20th, and Saturday, February 21st. And the Friday is a Friday night, and I think it's about $12. And the Saturday is all day, and that's, I think, $90 or $99 for the day. Okay. And East West, if you haven't been there, is an incredible place and resource and store and just a fountain of creative nourishment. And I'm so excited to be there this February 19th. And
that's the 19th.
The 20th and 21st. 20th and 21st.
Okay. 20th and 20th. Okay, because I'm putting in the chat. So the
yeah, and again, it's on planetsarc.com under ecstatic events. But returning to the subject of micro-movements, most of us are so creative, and even if we're not practicing it, we all are. And so we tend to assign ourselves things that are really large and exciting. And then when we can't accomplish them in the physical world, we get frustrated, and the inner critics turn on us, and then we go back into silence. So
yeah.
A lot of people have creative projects inside their heads, inside drawers, inside computers, inside closets that are just sitting there. Now, the good news is creative dreams always wait. They don't go away.
Oh.
They really
okay.
always wait. So we always get afraid that we're running out of time and there's not enough time and I've waited too long now. And listen, I wrote my first book when I was 10 years old and I wasn't published till I was 35. That's a lot of years.
Yeah.
Now I would
But it's
also,
yours inside you. It means it's something that had to come through you.
Yes. I was also very busy living and I was having a wonderful life and frankly I was filling up the creative well. I mean, I was so overflowing by the time I wrote that book in 1989. That's why I've written a book a year since. But back to what kept me focused, because procrastination is not a character flaw. It's not something you're born with and now you'll just be this way always. It's not a big problem that you have to do something about. It's just a habit of not finishing and not starting things. It's a habit of not starting things and a habit of not finishing things. That's it. So I started studying it as a topic. And by the way, there's a wonderful book called Procrastination by
right.
Jane Burka. It's probably listed on my resources in Planet's Arc.
Jane or James?
Who?
Jane, the Procrastination book?
Yeah, Jane Burka.
Jane Burka, okay.
Yeah. Well, it's a wonderful book, and it even works if you never open it. If you get that book and just have it in your house,
okay.
It will affect you. And you... He will be,
okay.
I'm just telling people. Okay, so that's number one. Number two, I started realizing I met a woman who had been paralyzed in an accident. This is where micro-movements came from. And she was told she would never walk again. And she just said, no, I don't accept that diagnosis. And she worked for 2 years until she finally was able to move the tip of her little finger. And
wow.
I just said, wow, that's like a micro-movement. And from there, she did go on to regain her mobility. And I thought, how could I take the concept of micro-movements and apply them to my creative life? So I immediately thought, I can do anything for 5 minutes or less. Anything. I can call someone I don't like. I can sit in a dental chair. I can, whatever it is, for 5 minutes I can do it. Maybe not more than that. So what would it be like if I turned everything into little tiny, tiny movements of 5 seconds to 5 minutes in length? And what if I wrote down a time and a date? And what if I put that on my wall, like on a scrap of paper or a post-it? And how might that change me? And it was a grand experiment, and it completely shifted my creative ability to be able to have what I now call a habit of completion. So micro-movements,
wow.
Every time you finish a five-minute movement, that part of your brain doesn't know how big it was or how long it was. It just knows that you completed something.
This is powerful.
And once you build that muscle, you will become so accomplished at completing. I complete everything I want to now. And I am telling you, I was probably the biggest procrastinator you had ever met. And so it now has a more advanced method. It's the micro-movement wheel. And so there's just like a, if you just can imagine a circle, a big circle with a smaller circle in the center and then spokes coming out from there. You write down your dream or what you want to accomplish in the center of the circle. And then you write, let's say, 8 micro-movements. Remember, they're 5 seconds to 5 minutes. Now, a micro-movement is just an ignition device. Most of us will do something for 5 minutes and then get really inspired and keep going. But the point is you don't have to. Let me give some examples. There was a woman who wanted to, she was 60 years old. Her husband had just died. She knew she wanted to do something new with her life, but she didn't know what it was. And her husband had been a watch repair person, and his studio was in the backyard. And she said, I know I want to do something with that studio, but I don't know what. So her first micro movement was open the door to the watch repair studio. Now, that was all she could do. I mean, she opened the door and she smelled his smells and saw his tools and started to cry and shut the door. That was it. Her next micro movement was open the door, walk inside. So these are all incredibly simple, tiny movements. Several hundred micro movements later, now remember they're 5 minutes. They're never more than 5 minutes unless you want to keep going.
Unless you want to. So if you did it for 5 minutes, you could technically stop. Or
you could feel overwhelmed or scared or just this is emotional, it's hard to call the dentist or whatever it is that you're avoiding. So several hundred micro movements later, she had an empty studio with a gleaming wood floor, and there in the center was an easel because she realized through the micro movement process that she wanted to be a painter. And within 2 years, she was showing in galleries.
Wow.
And she then used micro-movements to open a health food store. And but micro-movements don't have to be for giant projects. They can be for cleaning your closet.
Mm-hmm.
I use them for everything. I currently have 20 micro-movement wheels going. And they're on 20 different subjects. Remember when I said I'm writing 5 books?
Yes, yes.
Each book has its own micro-movement wheel. So I know I can glance. They're all clipped up on colorful clothespins in my studio right now. And I can glance at a micro-movement wheel and see where each book is in its process. So it's out of my head, and I'm not sitting there thinking, oh, I have those books. Oh, I have those books. I want to do something with those books. I want, you know, we tend to go over and over things in our minds. This gets it out of your mind, and it makes it physically visible so that it can just have its own life. And then as you complete each item, each micro-movement, you finish a wheel, you start a new wheel. Every one of my books is simply, hundreds of micro-movements strung together.
Now, which book do you have the micro-movement?
It's I think it's in almost every
book. It's woven in all of them
but there's specific chapters, like there's a whole section in Juicy Pens Thirsty Paper for writers specifically for micro-movements.
Okay. I have a client. Lori, if you're listening, this is for you.
The other big place that it appears is in a book called Make Your Creative Dreams Real, and that's a one-year program. You can do it, you know, you can take longer than a year or you can take shorter than a year, but there's a lot in there for that. So I teach it at every workshop I do, and so people leave with a completely filled-out micro-movement wheel. They have a micro-movement buddy. They're doing micro-movement practice. And micro movements work.
Yeah.
I love what one guy said when I taught this. He said, so basically micro movements are expect less, get more.
Well, but you know, it's true though, because you do kind of trick, the mind has it set up for a certain amount of time. And of course, because you decided you wanted to do it, you start getting more into it or more excited. Or it's not so bad, or you lose track of time, and there you are doing something longer or completely finishing it.
Absolutely.
It's moving from that inertia, because as you were speaking, as you were describing the micro-movements and the micro-movement wheel, I could feel the energy going, you know, just, in other words, you're priming that fire, you know, put the kindling on, it's just a little bit, and then it's a little more, and a little more, whereas when you're... You know, most of us, when we look at doing something, it's like daunting because we're looking at from beginning to end how much we need to do.
Oh, my God. And we're imagining how we're not going to be up to the task.
Yeah.
We're thinking of all the things we don't know. Here's another example. I was walking with my goddaughter on the beach a few years ago. She was applying to a college, and she was really nervous. And she said, you know, I have this long application that I have to fill out. And I said, great, bring it with you on our walk. And I said, I'll make a copy of it before we go. And you could tell she thought, well, why is she doing that? Well, I did it because I said we were walking along, and I just started interviewing her. And in my purple pen, just started wildly filling out the application, like writing hilarious things, you know, Xing things out, drawing on the application. I mean, by the end, she was so unafraid of this application, she, in a series of micro movements, finished it in a day.
Wow. Well, do you think some of it is the fear? Because I know the micro movements, it says move past fear, procrastination, perfectionism.
Oh, yeah, it's always fear. I mean, let's remember what fear stands for, false evidence appearing real.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we hear, I have to fill out, you know, I just got a form that has to do with some financial stuff that I need to fill out, and it's very daunting. And so I just did the same thing. I just made a copy of it and made a micro movement wheel for it and clipped it to the micro movement wheel, and now it's underway. Do you see? I mean, otherwise,
yeah.
It sits on shelves in your mind and tortures you.
Yes, yes.
And I have so many wonderful things in my mind that I want to have in my mind that are not that form that's scaring me or whatever it is.
Now, here's a question, Sark. Vina in the chat is talking about being creative and having such an active imagination that her imagination gets caught up in thinking what can go wrong.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's the classic, you know, turning from a worrier into a warrior. Tell her that I join her in that. I have the biggest issue with anticipatory worry or fear. It's the what-if syndrome.
Okay.
I used to say to my parents. Yeah, I used to say to my parents, you know, we would drive down the road on our vacation, and I'd say, what happens if a truck hits us and you're both decapitated, and how will the car continue going? You know. You know, and it.
Okay.
It is a challenge.
You are creative, boy.
Yeah, well, it's the challenge of the you know, it's almost a, let's not call it over-functioning, let's call it a very abundant imagination.
Abundant, abundant, yeah.
You know, and so the abundant imagination person has to make special care to express. So, you know, I do daily writing of things that are scaring me. And this process is detailed in one of my e-letters on planetsark.com. So you can go on there and read more about it. But basically, you write down everything that's scaring you. And, you know, I sometimes fill 6 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And then I address it to the universe or God or, you know, the world, whatever, and I fold it up and put it aside. It even that slight shift out of my head helps create some space of acceptance. Like, okay, I'm feeling scared today or things are worrying me today. But there's a second step that's really wonderful to do if you're in the mood to do it. I call it my wise self. You could call it your higher self. You could call it your nurturing parent, whatever name appeals to you. And I write at the top, wise self gladly speaks. And I go through each item on the long list of things that are scaring me, and I soothe and support and remind and offer resources, and I write. It really is channeled material because I'm writing from, a divine spirit place. And by the end of that, I rip up the list of things that are scaring me and I save the wise voice gladly speaks. And it's amazing what this does.
Yeah. It just, when you know that one part that's feeling scared just wants to be heard.
Absolutely.
And you're right? And then you're bringing in the complementary aspect of you that knows everything is okay, and you know it why isn't that expanded consciousness? Also, what I love about that, Sark, is that you're not suppressing that other part. You're listening to that part, because I think a lot of people don't realize if you suppress that other part, you're also dampening your flow.
Oh, absolutely. Right? I know. But it can be very seductive because you just think, oh, if I let go, if I really listen to that part, it will take over.
Mm-hmm.
And I can assure you it does not. It's often a very tiny, misshapen form part.
Yeah.
That is just very tiny, you know, kind of crawling along saying, everything is broken, I'm scared of everything. You know, that part, if you really can spend even 2 minutes listening to it, will shift everything.
Now, Kathy in the chat is saying, and this is, and I've had clients actually say this also, so Kathy, you're not alone, that they feel that they have so many thoughts or they're so scattered, then they think, well, she's saying, what should I do? But I've also heard some clients say, well, I don't want to write it down because it's too many thoughts. It's so scattered.
Well, I think that, again, if you develop that muscle, you know, I've never gone more than 8 pages, and I have a lot of thoughts. I mean, once you start practicing this, it really does end. I mean, I literally sit there finally with a blank page and a pen just sitting there going, okay, there isn't anything else. I can't think of anything else. And,
yeah.
You know, it really does end. And it's the fear that makes us think it's never going to end. So then we don't even start.
That. It really does end. So you're saying just write it anyway. It doesn't matter if it's scattered or – that's some perfectionism coming in there. Perfectionism.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, you know, no one's, you know, just to remember, no one's reviewing this list. No one's reading it. I write the most maniacal things. I mean, I write rage. I write, you know, this person is a stupid head. You know, I write very – childlike, kind of wild, you know, nothing makes sense. Sometimes I repeat the same thing 10 times on a piece of paper, and I get really mad, and I underline a bunch of things, you know, and furthermore, you know. So it really, you know, it's a very active process that really, with practice, continues to grow and change. And I do it most days. I mean, it's not a regimen, but it's certainly something that I have utilized that really contributes to my balance. You know, I really have a lot of experience of balance and calm. And then, of course, meditation. I mean, you know, meditating even 10 minutes a day really will change that resistance because, you know, when we don't want to write, we're resisting it. When we don't want to feel something, we're resisting. You know, sitting and watching your breath, as one friend says, I sit with my anxiety each day for 10 minutes. You know, it's like who sits with your anxiety? Who holds its hand?
Yeah. Call that contemplation meditation. I'll plug my book, a little good resource, Meditation for Everyday Living, and they're short meditations. So as far as that fits in with your 5-second, 5-minute.
Oh, good. I love it.
Yeah. A CD, Meditation for Everyday Living, a book and CD. And I tell there's no excuse because there's no time limit. You don't have to do it for 15 minutes, a half an hour, 45 minutes, or an hour. You know, the idea is just to do it.
But let's remember, Michelle, there's always an excuse.
I guess there is, yeah.
Listen, as a long-time avoider and only, you know, recently not practicing procrastinator, you know, I'm here to tell you there's always an excuse. You know, talk to my dentist. Talk to my dentist. They could tell you the unbelievable array of excuses I offer when I keep changing appointments.
Oh, well, I'm with that with the dentist chair. It's just, but you're 5-second to 5-minute micro-moment.
Well, I wrote about this. I actually wrote about a great experience I had at the dentist when I realized I was applying perfectionism to the dentist, and I gave myself permission to stop doing that. So halfway through a cleaning, I was in tears. I was really upset, and I just put my hand on her arm, and I said, "We're done now." And I got up and took that little bib off, and I left. And they still talk about it. It was the most revolutionary thing that had ever happened in the dental office. I just realized that I could be a really imperfect dental patient. Like I could just freak out and leave and they would still accept me back. And I came back a month later and they cleaned the rest of it. But, you know, I just couldn't take it anymore. But the power of standing up and taking that little bib off, I can't tell you.
Yeah. Imagine just doing that in your life. I mean, what a metaphor, you know, just.
Yeah.
Standing, this is enough. This is all, you know, this is what I can handle right now. This is all I can do, you know.
Yes. And if everyone would start doing that more and really telling, again, that goes back to, you know, authentic and real, you know, and you can just say to someone, you know what, I can't hear about this anymore. It's upsetting me.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
You know, if sometimes we just are like these little vacuum cleaners listening to everything, scooping it all up.
Yeah. Yeah, we do. And it's okay to say, you know, not enough or no, or even like you read the format of your books, I'm going to do it this way. You know, and I think actually in this new change point, Sark, I get your take on this, that's what the world wants right now. That's the big you know, scream, cry, whatever, is to be more individual, be more authentic, you know, to take the bib off, say, this is what I want to do and how I want to do it, you know, instead of following someone's arbitrary preconceived something, you know.
Well, yes, and I would add to that the other piece that the world is calling for, and I'm writing about this right now too, which is the practice, an active practice in addition to creativity, an active practice of self-love. We're all told to love ourselves. We're all taught to love ourselves, yet we're never supposed to talk about it, and we have very few examples of anyone doing it. And this all came to me about 3 years ago. I was in an elevator in New York, and the man in the elevator had such great energy that I was almost blinded by his light. And I said to him, "Wow, you have the best energy." And he said, "Thank you. I'm so in love with myself."
Yeah.
And I was just astounded. I thought, "Can you say that?" You know, I felt like, because we were all, and I'm not talking about narcissism here, and I'm not talking
right.
about self-absorption, I'm not talking about selfishness, I'm talking about the purest form of self-love which allows us to truly love another. And the world right now is calling for self-loving people to come forward and share that love from both.
Yes, then you're in a... Oops, she's on Skype, and it just the little hand went up. I'm not sure what that means.
The blog lady just came in my ear and told me I was in the queue. She scares me.
Oh, the blog lady. What queue? What queue?
She just came in my ear and said, "You are now in the host queue."
Oh,
and I thought, I have no idea why she's coming on. I had a lot of trouble with her the other day on a show I was on. She came in my ear every 5 minutes. It was like a nightmare.
Oh. Well, hopefully she's not there. Now there's a little hand on my switchboard, but whatever. Maybe she'll go away. If she comes back, we'll all roar and scare her away.
Be aware that if you can't hear me, she might be talking to me and I can't get past
her. Oh, she's not what
it is. So, yes, because if we're all self-loving full cups, we'll be able to share that overflow with everyone else in the world. And that is the absolute biggest purpose for everyone right now is to learn and practice self-love in the midst of anything that's going on, which is especially important at points of change.
Yes, yes. The other thing, too, I think on that is that it's the old paradigm that said that self-sacrifice, kind of drudgery, turn of the century, mentality that we've kind of had, and I think as we're moving into that self-love and self-acceptance, it's more about living life from that joy place instead of pain, you know?
Oh, absolutely. We can do so much more from joy than we can from pain. And, you know, I was born in the 1950s. I was indoctrinated, let's say, to that whole working hard. I remember for years I was trying to get my father's approval by working hard. And I would work hard, and then he'd kind of pound me on the back and say, "You did great, kid. You worked like a trooper," you know. And it was hard work that was rewarded. And now, of course, we see books that are, you know, don't work hard, work smart. You know, how's your energy? I mean, are you coming from joy or are you coming from pain? You know, we all experience pain, and that's all part of joy. I'm not suggesting sometimes people, they really misconstrue Pollyanna, by the way. You know, people will say, "Oh, you're just a Pollyanna." Well, first of all, that's the biggest compliment you can ever tell someone, because if you don't know that story, it's a little girl that came to a town and changed it, transformed the perspective of the town with her joy-filled existence. That's what Pollyanna is. And people took it and usurped it and turned it into something negative, where you're just some kind of ninny, some kind of overly positive ninny who runs around saying, "Everything is great, it's all flowers." You know, those people annoy me. I don't want to be near them. You know, it's those dark places completely fuel us and fertilize our joy places.
Yes.
So
you have to go deep. Go deep within.
And sometimes my bright colors in my books, you know, people misconstrue and think that I'm this, you know, mindlessly positive, overly, you know, everything's great all the time, annoying person. And so I often will start a talk and I'll say, overly, mindlessly positive people annoy me. And you can see all the shoulders in the room come down because they're just convinced that they're going to be, you know, I'm going to be on some loudspeaker of joy, joy, joy.
I call those bliss bunnies, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they have so unconscious, unaware.
Well, it could
but
be.
You do.
I what? No, what
no,
were
but
you going to say?
I think when people really read the book, so there's the deeper concepts are there.
Oh, absolutely,
you know,
absolutely.
Stand with Jen. I mean,
you know, the books, yeah. It, but, you know, at first reading, I can understand how they might appear fluffy or you know, if you, at first glance, I mean, not at first reading. But, you know, that's
yeah,
fine.
Glance.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm happy to be thought of as a ninny and a Pollyanna and a whatever else anyone wants to think. I used to, you know, care and be invested in that. I'm not anymore. I really truly have embraced the concept that it's none of my business what you think of me.
Mm.
And it's
really
a wonderful
important
freedom.
If we're going to live freedom and really important if we want to live creatively, right? If
absolutely. People get, you know, perfectionists especially are so afraid of judgment. And let me just, you know, be sure to say you will be judged. People will not like your work. People will think your creative offerings are stupid. And, you know, to have the maturity and the wisdom and grace to offer your creative expression no matter what anyone thinks of it.
I had that. It was a great learning, great gift with that, with coming to the place that if you like what I do or you like my workshop or my stuff, good. If you don't, good. Because it's all what's going on in that person's mind, isn't it? It's really
yes.
has nothing to do.
Yes.
It's either way, you know.
You just reminded me. I completely forgot to talk about this. Clearly, we could have many shows, you and I. Is that I'm starting a new service starting on March 1st. I'm so excited about it. We're launching it next week, and it's called Couching. It's Couching with Sark, and it has elements of coaching. It has elements of mentoring. It has elements of therapy, but it's called Couching.
And when does it start?
It starts on March 1st, and it launches next week on my website on February 12th. I'm also offering, for people who aren't ready or able to do couching, I'm offering something called Scoops of Sark. And those are 15-minute calls to anyone in the world about any subject to inspire, encourage, support.
Oh, I'm going to call you.
And, you know, let's be sure to mention the inspiration line. Do you call it?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, I've had an inspiration phone line for 15 years, and about 15,000 people a month call from all over the world. And I'm on there singing and talking, and it's about 5 minutes in length. It's free. It's 415-546-3742. And if you like words, numbers that turn into words, it's 415-546-EPIC, E-P-I-C. And that's also on my website if you don't have a chance to write it down, and it's also listed in the back of all the books.
Okay. Now, I want to put it in the chat again. So with the inspiration phone line, it's 415-546-3742. 3742. Great. What fun.
I know. It's the greatest transpersonal gift because I hear messages from everyone all over the world every day.
You've got so, you know, the resources, and they're fun resources, eclectic resources on your site. You know, I think there's something just for everyone. How people are already going over there on the way to
Hawaii. Oh, yeah, and did you ask Jupiter a question? This is my big, beautiful black cat who died about 4 years ago. Before he died, he told me he wanted to be an oracle on the website. And he channeled about 400 answers to me, and I wrote them all down. And we fed them into the computer along with photographs of him. And you can go into Sark Studio on the website. You'll find him in there. And you click on him. And you ask a question, and I will just tell you, he's uncanny.
Okay.
It's uncanny, his accuracy.
That's right up my alley. I love doing stuff like this.
Yeah.
Now, so just in the last little bit, I want to touch on the juicy pen, thirsty paper. Is that mainly for writers?
Well, thanks for asking, because it really is for everyone, because, you know, the subtitle is Gifting the World with Your Words and Stories and Creating the Time and Energy to Actually Do It. So it doesn't need to, you know, you might not want to even publish, but I really am an advocate of everyone sharing their words and stories, because everyone is creative, everyone is a writer, even if you've never thought of yourself as that. You don't need to even use that name.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's an abundantly creative workshop, extremely interactive, very colorful, a lot of humor, and there's also, it's a lot of depth.
Okay, now that's Juicy Pens, Thirsty Paper.
Yeah.
It makes you want
to. I know, it makes my teeth feel funny, like I want to bite something.
I know, bite something, but it's with a thirsty paper. It's like, yes, you have to write something here or draw something here. You just have to.
Yeah, I know. It was so exciting to write a book about sharing words and stories, because, of course, that's what I've been doing all these years, and I had a lot to say, you know, and there's a lot of photographs and art. Every page has color and tons of resources, and it's a wonderful book.
Mm. I'm so, you know, happy that you flowed here today, Sarah, because this has been really, really...
Oh, me too. You've completely you've completely nourished me and filled me up, and I love your energy. You're great. You're doing great work, Michelle. I mean, I know
thanks.
That, but I just want to say.
Oh, I appreciate it. I love the appreciation, and I love meeting here and sharing people. And now I realize, I said, oh my God, I'm going to share all the people that I like. And that's when you got. And that's when we got, Planet Sark got a late email with, it's time for creativity. Everybody,
well,
wake up.
And I'm just going to, you know, we can talk about the details of this later, but I want to do another one with you. So.
Oh, goody. Yes,
yeah.
Let's. Definitely.
And I love the questions, and I love the chat, and I love the, you know, I love the...
Great energy here.
Yeah.
We have a great... because they're in the change point. Everyone that tends to come here is just, you know, changing their life. You know, not the essence of who they are, but really, you know, taking the books, wanting to get into creativity, wanting to, you know, self-express more, create those new forms. And now is the time. I mean, this maybe just... to Barack Obama needs to get these books. You know?
Oh, I know. I wrote, actually, right? I wrote on the website, I wrote my whole vision for America, and I offered myself as a creative ambassador, and I really recommend that everyone go to the whitehouse.gov website, because they are doing a fantastic job using the internet for transparent government. We've never had it.
And what is it now?
Gov? Whitehouse.gov.
Okay, I'm going to
go. I mean, when did you ever go to the White House website? Never.
Never. No.
So, you know, they're asking.
And I know they're very open to people, you know, emailing and taking the input. Because most of them, you know, all of us, but especially, you know, the ones that are swimming in the mainstreamy and having the challenges right now in the economy, we've got to learn how to create again, you know.
And to find out that it's right there all along. It hasn't gone anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I so see you. I see you on the White House steps. I see these books in hand, juicy pens, thirsty paper, prosperity, inspiration sandwich. I can see you walking up there, giving out purple pens to everyone.
I know. I love it.
Well, we're winding out of time here for this time, but Sark, we definitely will talk afterwards, and we'll definitely have you back and share and play some more. Again, thank you so much for sharing your path, your process, and your inspiration with us, Sark.
Oh, I loved it. It was just absolutely fabulous, and I just have the most magnificent and juicy and succulent rest of the day.
Ooh, thank you.
Okay.
Blessings. Bye.
Bye.
And thank you all so much for joining in. This has been absolutely amazing to play in this realm of self-expression and creativity. You're so welcome, Kathy. Tammy, you loved hearing Sark. Me too, and she'll be back. We'll play some more and get some more self-expression and creativity. That's the key, everyone. pioneering spirit right now. We're out creating this temporary crisis, which is a choice point, and we're all choosing a new way of being, and we're connecting here to support each other and share with each other, inspire each other, because we are co-creating the new way of being. We are the co-creators. We're on the front line, and we're on the curve, and all doing it. I think that's the one thing to keep in mind, is that we are already doing it. So to that note, shine your light. Go out and shine your light. Share your love. Light your wisdom. Just share a bit of yourself. Keep awake, awaken others, and inspire yourself. And until next time, keep awake. Remember, only you can be you. So just be you. Shine light.